So I've been asked by the organizers to review all backgrounds, but I will concentrate mostly on the optical and far infrared. Basically, obviously, observing the cosmic background is really telling us what is the content of the universe in terms of electromagnetic radiation, and it could be diffuse emission. In most cases, in fact, it seems to be some of sources. Now, when the backgrounds are resolved, or are going to be resolved probably soon, like the X-ray background, the observation of the background is just telling you that there is no extra diffuse emission. In the far infrared and the millimeter, we are still in the situation where it's mostly unresolved in the far infrared and partly unresolved, as we just heard, in the submillimeter. And what we could derive from that is just the total energy released by galaxies, eventually from the spectrum, some constraint on the evolution with redshift, and eventually from the structure, some constraint on the luminosity function. Now, just to give you the order of magnitude and the various numbers, starting from the CMB and normalizing to 1, I will show you that the infrared is about 4%, with in fact this range of uncertainty. The optical is about 2. You fall then by a factor about 200 from the infrared optical to X-rays, which is an interesting number to look at, because if the AGN should contribute a substantial fraction of this background, it needs a total correction from the hard X-rays to the volumetric luminosity, which is larger than what is usually assumed. Gamma rays is another factor of 30 below, and radio is very low. So basically, most of the energy besides CMB coming from sources is really in the far infrared and the optical. Now, at the same plot as was shown by Ibarger just before, so you can see here the CMB. I will discuss in detail this part here. That's the hard X-ray background, so it's an interesting comparison between what is the contribution from the extinct part of these objects here and the radio is down here. Okay, so now I'll start describing the measurement of the background starting from the millimeter range and going upwards in frequency. Now, when you want to deal with measuring the background, you need to remove the foreground, which are either in the solar system or in the galaxy, and so you need to take care of the Dirac emission, interstellar emission, and stars. I will go quite quickly on that. Zodiac emission is used by the fact it's variable in time, and that has been done basically by the Goddard group, the COBE teams. Interstellar emission, the only way to do that properly is to use independent tracers of the interstellar emission, and in thin regions, basically what has been used is the 21 centimeter data, and also the H-alpha data for the ionized component. One of the problems is when you want to try to subtract the interstellar emission in the best windows, the lowest cirrus region at high galactic latitude, you want to make sure that what you are measuring is properly corrected from contribution of the galaxy in the far side lobes of your beam. But one thing which has been done very well in this Twinkleo survey by Hartmann and Burton, and that's why this survey is really the one to be used for this kind of work. And the correlation with with the dust in ionized gas is done now, start to be done with a Reynolds survey. For the stars at short wavelengths, the stars start dominating in the 2 to 3 micron region, and that has been done both by UCLA group and the Goddard group. Just to show you the order of magnitude of these various components, going from 1 micron here to 1 centimeter here with the CMB here, the Zodi emission and scattering part is here. That's a typical high latitude interstellar emission. And what you are looking for the extragalactic background is in this range here. So you can see that basically it's hopeless to try to detect it directly in the 10 to 60 or 80 micron region where the Dirac emission is very strong. You get a good window around 2 to 3 micron. Then the scattering is again making it very difficult to measure directly in the optical. So now people have been working on that past few years, mostly using the COBE data. I will try to describe what has been done, and that all the papers that I'll be using in reviewing this situation. So leave that plot here, which is, as far as I could pull things together, the combination of all this data going all the way here from the millimeter range, that's in gigahertz, so you are here around 1 millimeter, all the way to 1500 angstrom here. Now, at long wavelengths, basically you use the FIRAS data from COBE, and in fact you could see in number of spectra going from here, millimeter, all the way to 100 micron, you could see the CMB here, and at various galactic latitude, you could see the change in the emission you detect going down when you go higher and higher in galactic latitude, with one component here that you could see popping up, which is in fact the zodiacal emission at the shortest wavelength, which starts to be apparent. So it's not a very easy job. Just to convince you that you can still make a reasonable determination, if you go in the Lockmann Hall region, which is one of the cleanest in terms of the current density of H1, the FIRAS data, the raw FIRAS data, is a black curve here. And basically, if you remove the dust emission associated with the neutral hydrogen component and ionized hydrogen component, you are left with a red curve here. And basically what you can see is in the range of, let's say, 300 to 600 or 800 micron, the correction is small. So it's in one case, you see almost directly the extracted background, and then the noise is blowing up at these wavelengths, but you have a very good determination in this region, which is relatively safe. It's much more difficult when you go towards 100 micron. Just as an illustration, as one of the very recent things, that's from this paper by Gillen Nagash and the Reynolds group, what is the spectrum of the emission associated with the ionized gas, which was the main uncertainty and the main source of controversy about the level of the background in this range here. So you can see a number of points from the Derby data. At 240, there is a very good agreement with the FIRAS data. You can see the two determinations by the Goddard group and our group here. At 140, the same. You see that there is very good coincidence what the various groups have given, that the best determination, which is obtained after removing the dust in the ionized gas, and that's Mikhauser's point with as an upper limit because of the removal of the ionized gas. There is in fact now even a point at 100 micron which could be derived using that. But the systematic errors are quite large. In fact, this point is what you get at 100 micron. That's just the statistical errors. In fact, the uncertainties which are related to the ZODI subtraction and the interstellar one are probably 3 or 4 times larger than the statistical. Now, when we go to shorter wavelengths, as I said, there is no way, because of this very strong ZODI emission, and you can see that the Derby upper limits are very high here. So there are two ways to deal with the problem of figuring the background, is to use the very high TeV gamma rays, especially from Mark 501, to get upper limits in this region, and to use number counts to get lower limits. So let me show you that now. That's the number counts taken from IsoCam, and it goes here. You can see here you have Minijansky, so typically 100 millijansky all the way to about 100 or 50 microjansky. So this plot is taken from David Elbaz and collaborators' paper. And you can see, in fact, the number counts, which start to turn over. In fact, you can see that better on the differential count. you can see the differential counts in the faintest region, where there is this conspicuous strong evolution here, but this then this cutoff here when you go below about 300 microgensky. And so although you don't get a fully converged count, you can still get a reasonable upper limit on the 15 micron background, which is here. So that's this point. And in fact, you get a number of upper limits from the gamma rays, which are here, depending what the French group or the US group you are using. So basically, you are pinning down the background by something which is not more than a factor of 2 here, which is quite remarkable. Sorry? That's just a pair production on the background. In fact, what people are doing now in refining that is to use the fact that we know the background at long wavelengths. We have at least good lower limits that I'm going to describe here. And so you can use the gamma rays, in fact, to try to put better upper limits here. And that's being done. It's not finished yet. Let me just show the HDF field as observed by ISOCAM, just to stress a point which was stressed by Berger before. The contours in yellow are the 15 micron observation with ISOCAM. Of course, the angular resolution is lousy compared to the HDF. We are doing cosmology here with the 60 centimeter telescope. And what I was describing before, before with the Derby data, I was doing cosmology with a 19 centimeter telescope. But we're going to improve with 30 if we are going to go to an 80 centimeter telescope. The point to notice is that the power which is here, which is not that much smaller than what you see in the optical, it's something like a factor of typically 2 below that, is contained only in this very small number of objects. So these small number of highly luminous galaxies, which are, in fact, the average redshift here is 0.75 for these infrared galaxies, are putting out as much energy as all the optical ones. So that's one thing to keep in mind, is that when you are describing what's happening in terms of star formation at this redshift, you better take into account this population also. Now, going to the optical, that's a well-known count from the Hubble Space Telescope in the HDF. And so you can see that these counts are well converged, and they lead to these points here. That's the K band count from the ground. And I want to mention now these points. At 3.5 micron in the Derby data, if you take out the stars and the zodiacal emission, you end up with these two determinations, one by Dweck and Aaron, and the other one by Ned Wright and Rees. And you see that they agree very well. The error bar is quite large, and it's mostly due to the uncertainties in the subtraction from stars. Now you have also you have only an upper limit from Elie Dweck, from the Gerb group here, but Ned Wright has obtained also a K-band value here, and it's about more than a factor of 2 above the integral of the K-count, and you see that if you believe his error bar, it's incompatible. So it could indicate that, in fact, there is the background is significantly higher than the integral of the count. Now, there is something similar going on in the optical. That's taken from a paper by Pierre Madao, and he's quoting a thesis by Bernstein et al., by a preprint by Bernstein and thesis work, which seems to indicate from the HST that if you measure really the background between sources, you do get a value which is about twice what you get from the integral of the count. Now, that's a very difficult exercise because you are getting in a regime in the optical where this OD emission is very large. So you are getting, again, into a very difficult correction. The point I want to make here is in the UV, you get the counts which give you this point. And you get here the upper limit, which I think is a very good one, from Martin Boyer and the Berkeley group in a rocket experiment. which is about a factor of 2 above, it's at a 1500 angstrom, it's not exactly the same wavelength. But, and that seems to indicate that at least in the UV, whatever could be in diffuse scattered light and not in the sources is no more than a factor of 2. And if it's scattered, you would expect that ratio to be even smaller when you go to the optical. So I'm somewhat skeptical about this point, because the determination is with such small error bars, by taking out the Zodi, I have a hard time to see how you could get to that. But there is really an uncertainty. And so the numbers I gave in my first transparency are taking that into account. Yes. So that could be the problem. But in the UV, the upper limit from the Berkeley group is what it is. It's an integral measurement, an upper limit. No. Now, in the optical, basically, there is something like a factor of 2 uncertainty. So altogether, coming back to these numbers, I think the infrared now is pinned down to this kind of accuracy, typically 20%, between 40 and 50 nanowatts per square meter per steradian. That's integrated all the way from 15 microns to 1 millimeter. The optical is uncertain, I think, by up to a factor of 2, which makes the ratio of optical to infrared somewhere between 1 and 2.6. Now, if you look at the Soifer-Nogabar studies of optical galaxies with IRAS, they did use local value of infrared to optical over the same range of 0.3. So whatever you take, you still need a strong increase of the ratio of infrared to optical with redshift. Now, let me go to what you deduce from the spectrum. If you take infrared galaxies, which have a fairly standard universal spectrum, which can move around depending on the luminosity from about a peak at around 60 microns for high luminosity sources to up to 140 or something like that for lower luminosity sources. With redshift and strong evolution, you might get something which is fairly flat at the background, and then as you go to higher and higher redshift, you will get something like that. The shape of the background, in fact, can be used to constrain the production rate of infrared energy as a function of redshift. Of course, you have the uncertainty on the spectrum, and you can take a just typical spectra for galaxies, low luminosity galaxies, which have a higher ratio of 15 microns to long wavelengths, and a peak at longer wavelengths, and a peak shifting to shorter wavelengths when you go to higher luminosity. Now, what we have done is to use three types of spectra. One, which is typically associated with with L-star-type galaxies like our own, with about 3 × 10 solar luminosity, 3 × 11, and ULIRGS at 3 × 12. And using these different spectra and changing also the slope at long wavelengths, we have just done a Monte Carlo calculation just to check what are all the possible histories of the production rate which do fit the background. So it's purely empirical. The only assumption is your big galaxies making the background are in the typical range of spectra you observe for galaxies in the luminosity range I given. You can also change the cosmology, which is quite remarkable, is that there is a redshift range from 1 to about 4, for which, independently of this assumption, you need a production rate which has to go to high value and a fairly flat redshift evolution to fit the background. There is very little constraint, or no constraint, basically at redshift below 1, and that's easy to understand. If you shift the peak of your galaxy from 60 microns to 150 microns, you can make them either by nearby galaxy or by galaxy at redshift of 1, and so you have no way to constrain this function here. When you go to the very longest wavelength, the largest redshift, then the uncertainties in the Fajras data are becoming large, and furthermore, the slope, the uncertainty in the slope of the long wavelength emission of the galaxy come in and also make the error bars become very large. What I want you to keep is that starting from the local value here, the only way to fit the background is to jump by a factor of something in commoving energy production rate, by a factor of 20 to 25 here, between 0 and redshift of 1 or 1.5, and then something almost flat or going down slowly. And that's something which is not model dependent. That basically is the fit you get. And in fact, if you want to fit also the 15 micron, you have to take the 5, 10 to the 11 solar luminosity dispersion. Now let me quickly, so you can just convert that into star formation. And so that's typically the kind of smooth curve you can go through these points I draw before. That's an uncorrected optical star formation rate determination. And if you do the large extinction correction, you come here. So you come not too far, but still short of getting the same production rate. Now, what do we know about the sources making the bulk of the background at 170 micron? We did with ISO a large deep survey, and that's a number count from this survey. It's about 4 square degrees altogether. And what you find here in this number count is a very steep log n log s slope, 2.2. And there was another survey which was done by a collaboration between Japanese group and an American group, which gives also compatible numbers. And this observation was done in the Lockman Hall. Now, I think what we can do with this data is also looking at the structure of the background. That's from ISO data, observation of fairly bright regions, and what you find that the power spectrum of the fluctuation, and when you're in bright cirrus region, what you find is something which is which is basically the K minus 3, which was already found many years ago by Gauthier et al. On the IRAS data. When you go to very low brightness region, this spectrum is flattening, and that's what was found by Erstmeyer and collaborators in 1997. They were to some extent limited by noise. In fact, the data we have now have higher signal to noise than these ones, and so we do expect to be able to see the fluctuation of the background at high frequency. You can see here the star here is a power spectrum in one of these fields from the ISO data at 170 micron. And you can see here that's the cutoff of the resolution of ISO. And you see this rise here, which is basically what you expect from the cirrus component. And just a purely K minus 3 cirrus component will give something like that because of the cutoff of the beam. And the observation here are flattening, and you see here something which is probably associated with the background fluctuation. Okay, I'm concluding. So the thing I wanted to conclude with is that what we have observed at 170 micron, contrary to what's going on in the submillimeter range, where you have seen that a large fraction of the background is probably already resolved into sources, when you integrate from typically 1 Jansky, 200 millijansky, what is number counts we have observed, we have something like 5% only of the background, which is resolved into sources. Now, if you extrapolate this background, either with a steep slope here, you need to go all the way down to about 8 millijansky to fill the background. If you take just a Euclidean slope, you need to go to a fraction of a millijansky. And so the idea is using the fluctuation, and that's, we have enough signal to noise to do that, so that's not done yet, but I think that's something will come out in the coming months, is to use the P of D analysis of these deep fields to constrain the log n log s and try to figure out what are the sources which are probably contributing most of the of the background. The type of number you are expecting in these two very simple models in terms of the power spectrum are between 8,000 and 3,000. And in fact, what we have observed in two of these fields are these numbers. So you see that we are more on the high side, which seems to indicate that you need to extrapolate a steep spectrum, but that will come in a few months. Okay, thank you.
Now that's, I think that's one of the concerns I had when I was speaking to the star formation rates derived from the SCUBA sources. The background must be a strong constraint on luminosity function of 850 micron sources. And I'm not sure what conversion factors you used in there, but I guess the question is if you use the, it's to actually both speakers, if you use the luminosity function that you've used to correct your star formation rates, is it consistent with the observed far infrared background, or do you overpredict the 850 micron background results?
I'll give you my answer. I can complement that. What we have done is to see what are the constraints of the luminosity function as a function of redshift. If we follow this curve, which means we fit the background, and at the same time, the 850 micron count, the 170 micron count, and the 15 micron count. And there is one possibility, which is fairly narrowly constrained, is the limitless function in which, for the infrared, which starts from the local infrared limitless function, but in which you put most of the evolution only in the luminous infrared galaxies, which means typically 2 to 3 10 to the 11. The sources which are observed at 850 are typically these sources. So I think we are in full agreement saying that basically the bulk of the flux is coming from somewhat weaker sources, but not 10 to the 10. You have to concentrate the luminosity here if you want to fit both accounts on the background. If not, you cannot, there is a contradiction.